Hello and welcome to another episode of Lie, Cheat, and Steal, the podcast about liars, frauds, thieves, and bullshitters. I'm your host, Pat Sorois. Just a reminder that we are a bi-monthly podcast, and you can find us on Twitter at LCS Podcast, and we're on TikTok and Instagram at Lie, Cheat, Steal Podcast. If you like what you hear, please leave us a five-star review wherever you're listening to this, or you can subscribe to our Patreon. We release two more episodes every month. That's at patreon.com/liecheatandsteal. Anyways, I'm here, as always, with my co-host, Kath Barbadoro. Kath, how you doing?
Hi, Pat. I'm pretty good. This is our second recording of the night, so I'm getting a little loose. I'm having another canned cocktail, which I had last time we recorded.
Always makes for a good episode. Oh, very hello. Good. I'm back to my known for drink, my Lone Star 16-ounce tall boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, the signature, yeah.
Call it the Pat.
I didn't drink Sunday through Wednesday. Yeah, call it the Pat. I didn't drink Sunday through Wednesday. I'm on a weird-ass work stand down with the union right now.
Oh, yeah.
It turns out, so we work on the third floor. The second floor was deemed unsafe.
Ah.
And they,
can't go up there then.
Yeah, it was like and I've always been a proponent of this. The third floor is heavily dependent on the second floor.
It's very true.
And so, yeah, so they got everybody out of there. They were like, "All right," so they're like, "We're gonna send you home for the day, and we'll follow up with tomorrow." And then we're like, later that day, they were like, "Yeah, we're good, coming tomorrow." But they're like, "Actually, don't go in. Let's all meet over here at a meeting. They got to get an engineer out there." But they were like, "But check it out, we're gonna pay y'all for the week, so just go home." And I was like, hell
yeah. This is so funny because we recorded some episodes like 2 days ago and you were like, man, back to the grind. I had this nice time off. Back to the grind. You had like 48 hours of the grind and then they're just like, we'll just pay for the week. It's fine.
We'll just pay you. But here's where the grind continues. And so 5 minutes down the road after I left, they were like, actually, we do need y'all to show back up every morning to because Samsung there you go. The Korean tech company I work for cuts the bill for labor every day. Mm-hmm. And I don't work for them, but we work with them. They cut the bill for labor every day. And so they could feasibly be like, well, hold on, were y'all there ready to work? Like, you know, if nobody was there, we shouldn't have to pay. So we have to show up to show a willingness to work.
That sucks because you have to be there really early and it's far.
You have to be there really early. I got to be out the house by 4:30, but it's way less prep than normal. Like, I just have to go and show up, so I don't have to make sure I have all this stuff, so I can wake up pretty late.
You can roll out of bed. Late.
Yeah, late considerably. I can wake up at 4:20 instead of leaving at 4:30. You know,
right?
But I got there today. It wasn't that bad. Like, I just like smoked cigarettes with a bunch of curmudgeonly old union dudes.
Yeah,
and we had a bunch of time.
And then you have the whole day off if you don't end up working.
I edited so much video. Like, it's like it happened. It was again yesterday. That's why I hit you up. I was like, hey, can I release this video early because it's already done?
Hell yeah!
So I love it, man. It's been good, man.
Here's to
you. How are things? Yeah, how are things up there in New York today?
Things are good. It snowed this morning, which was very exciting. Love to get a little snow.
Cool.
It didn't stick. It didn't stay. But we got a little bit of snow, which is good. This is like the longest period without I can't remember what they call it, but basically like there's a different name for when snow accumulates versus when it snows. Cause like,
yeah,
you know, it was like maybe 35 degrees today, but it was snowing because it was, you know, up higher. Yeah. It was colder and everything.
Up high. Yeah. Yeah.
So, New York, this is like the longest New York has gone without like accumulating snowfall since like the 19th century, since like the Civil War, basically.
Oh,
was like,
damn.
It's because we didn't get like any last year. So it's been since like the March of 2022 or something like that. Like, it's been a really long time.
Wow.
So
I wonder what's been happening globally to make that be the case.
Who can know?
Bit of a mystery.
Know?
Yeah, yeah. That's, you know, who could know, you know?
But I was encouraged we got some today because it might mean we actually get some that sticks. Like, last year we barely got any flurries even. So I'm encouraged. I'm heartened.
I've heard city snow living is rough because, like, I've talked to a few friends that bartended in New York, and they're like, if it's snowing outside, you got to walk to work with an extra pair of pants. Because by the time you get, if the snow's heavy, by the time you get to work, your pants are just soaked.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I would imagine that it could be rough when it snows there, but it's also probably alarming if it doesn't.
Yeah, and it depends. I think bartenders have a unique problem where, like, because their hours are what they are, like, they're walking through unshoveled sidewalks and stuff because they're like getting out of work like late at night and stuff. If you work a normal schedule, like it's actually better than not living in the city because like you don't have to shovel your own driveway and shit. So like, it's I don't really mind it. But yeah, definitely when it snows a lot, you got to get the like the fucking galoshes out or you're the bottom of your pants.
When I lived in Connecticut, I remember like one time it was like my first winter there, and I was like, you know, a Texas kid learning snow, and I was like, I had this genius idea. I was like, oh, I'll dig out my car tonight, and in that way it'll
fool's errand, Pat.
Yeah, because I dug it out and the snowplow just came by one fell swoop, knocked it all back over
Fuck
in my
y'all.
Car.
Yep.
Yeah. And I woke up later because I was like, I already dug the car out last night. I woke up, car was all just. That's a horrible way to live. I don't get why people got there back in the day. They weren't just like, let's go a few miles south. They knew it was warmer. Why didn't they do it?
I, growing up, lived next to our next door neighbor. He owned a paving company. And so he had plows and stuff. And he would like sometimes plow our. We didn't have like a big driveway, but we had a driveway that we'd have to dig out. And he would sometimes do it. And I feel like my parents were like, no, it's important that you learn how to shovel snow. Like, it's like, because it wasn't done all the time. Like, we definitely had to shovel out that driveway. And it's like, man, why can't we just ask Mr. Matthews? He has a fucking plow in his driveway right now. Anyway.
Dude, my cousins were all snow. Yeah, my cousins were all snow plowers. Or they were all like landscapers in the winter. They did snow plowing.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm.
And I was like trying to go to a bar one time, and I was going to drive there in my car. My cousin was like, he's like, you're gonna drive your car? He's like, you're a little ass sedan. It was snowing. He goes, yo, ride with me. And so we drove in the snowplow, and he dropped the snowplow while we were going like 50. It was just snow was just flying over us.
That sounds
and he
fun.
Was having a blast. I was freaking out. I was like, I've never seen this before.
Well, I have a segue. This story takes place in another snowy city, or a lot of it does anyway, even further north than us. A lot of my story today takes place in Toronto, Ontario.
Toronto.
They got the lake
six.
Effect, so there's a lot of snow up there.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Running through the six with my snows. Yeah, you guys know how it goes. Little Drake action. Yeah.
So a lot of this story, the sort of skeleton of this, and then I did some other research to sort of fill things out, is from a Wired article from 2011. Written by Jonah Lehrer, who ironically could be a subject on the show because he is a known plagiarist. So,
oh, word.
Interesting sort of crossing of the paths. It also did make me feel a little less bad about basing an episode primarily off of his article because it's like, well, you ripped off a lot of other people. So
Yeah.
I can rip you off a little bit on this one. It's only
I was like,
fair.
Imagine our episode is about snow and it's just like, and his article was just Robert Frost's poem. About, like, just like walking in the woods.
Wow, Jonah Lehrer wrote this really nice poem. Yeah.
the road less traveled.
No, this story is actually about the lottery, more specifically scratch-offs. We're going to talk about scratch-offs
Hell
today.
Yeah.
Pat, you like a scratch-off? Are you a good scratch-off?
I'm not a big gambler outside of dice.
Yeah. You like a game. Like, so you don't want to just...
I like a game, yeah. The scratch-offs. So every now and then, like, and I say, this has been years since I did it, but when I was younger... Maybe like once a year I'd buy a scratch-off with the reasoning being, I never do this, I'll win.
Right.
And it never really worked out like that. I watched my mom was a big scratch-off. She had a scratch-off period when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And it went through that. But me, myself, never been a big scratch-off guy. They seem fun. What I thought was fucked up was one time I bought a Christmas-themed scratch-off.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, scratch off these little things. And it was like, I don't know, a mitten, a snowman, and like a candy cane. It was like what I got. And I started scratching off, like, the bank, and I'm going, and it was like, I got through some other things, and I was like, yo, how many more Christmas shapes can there be? And, like, there was a lot more Christmas shapes. I had none of them. I was like, I didn't even have that many Christmas shapes that were identifiable enough to be included in a Christmas-themed scratch-off. So, yeah, I don't fuck with them too heavy, so.
Well, your habits sound like a lot of people's, because apparently half of Americans will buy at least one lottery ticket at some point in their life. But the vast majority of lottery tickets, including scratch-offs, are purchased by about 20% of the population who, like, play games, lottery, like, state-run games of chance fairly frequently.
I've been trying to buy gas before. I've been behind 20% motherfuckers.
It sucks because it's, like, when people are buying like a million scratch offs or a million lottery tickets or something, it holds up the line. And also, you know that like they're hurting themselves. It's like, this is inconveniencing me and it's hurting you. Like,
yeah,
both our lives would be better if this transaction was not happening. It's like, it's very frustrating. But yeah, so people who don't like the lottery say that the lottery is a regressive tax because the people who play it the most tend to be poor people. So it like it disproportionately takes from people who have little, because that's like how the lottery works in a lot of places in North America, including Canada, which we'll talk about. A few Canadian provinces have the lottery, and 43 states have the lottery. So I guess every Canadian province does, 43 states.
It's like, what do you even win in a Canadian lottery? Like, how many hockey pucks can one man have? You know?
It's funny because, like, I just assume, like, I know on British TV game shows, they can't give away prizes. And, like, I just sort of thought Canada was like that, too, where it's like...
Oh, where they can't give away a prize?
Yeah.
It's like...
Like, they can't give away, like, monetary prizes. They can't give away prizes with, like, a monetary value. So
they have to like, disguise a prize?
Well, it's like, if you win Great British Bake Off, you get, like, a little trophy. Like, you don't get money, you know?
Those fucking losers.
Yeah. It's because it's, like, gambling rules. It's, so you can't do it.
They just let you French kiss Noah Fielding.
Exactly.
Noah will give you a right smack in the lips with a little bit of tongue.
I'd compete. I like Noah Fielding. I give him a little smooch. Anyway.
You just get a massage from Paul Hollywood.
That I would turn down. I find him creepy.
He's a bit much.
He looks like a husky with his blue eyes. It's too much. That's too much for me. I don't like it.
Go pull a sled.
But anyway, in the 18th and 19th centuries, lotteries sort of started becoming popular in North America. They actually funded some early expansions of Harvard and Yale, and also constructions of some of the railroads. And then in 1964, my home state of New Hampshire became the first state to incorporate the first like state-run lottery. Where
live free or die.
Exactly. Freedom to gamble, baby. In some states, revenue from the lottery accounts for more than 5% of education funding. So it's, it's big. So that brings us to our story today, which is about a guy who basically cracked the code of scratch-offs. And what he did with that information is very interesting to me. So...
I had a friend that worked at a gas station that claimed that he did that. And I take him at his word for it. I can't remember the details. It's basically something like he would know that if somebody bought a ticket, how he could hold a ticket. I don't know. I had a gas station friend who claimed that he knew how to crack the code.
Well, I'm going to explain how this guy cracked the code, and we'll see if it jogs your memory. Because it's definitely possible that other people have figured this out, there's some evidence that they have, which we'll go into. But the main part of the story is about this guy named Mohan Srivastava, who is a statistician who was living in Toronto. All of this stuff happened in like 2003-ish was when this story starts. So he is like working at his desk one day and he's like rummaging around for something and he finds some old scratch offs that like someone had given him as like a gag gift or something. So he's scratching them off. First one loses. The second one, he wins on. And the one he wins on is a tic-tac-toe game. So you've probably seen these. It's like on the right, there's a tic-tac-toe board. And then on the left is the scratch-off part. And you're supposed to scratch it off and compare the numbers on the scratch-off side to the other side. And if they like get if the numbers on that side are in your scratch-off in a row and you get a tic-tac-toe, you win money. So it's like a matching game, you know?
Yeah.
This is like a very common form of scratch-off. So he wins $3. He's like, whoopee. Like, neat, cool. That's interesting. But then he starts thinking about it because this is a math game, you know?
Yeah.
And this guy's
a statistician.
He's a statistician. He has a degree. Yeah. He has degrees from MIT and Stanford. So he's a very good statistician.
Yeah, hell yeah.
And he was very intrigued by what this lottery ticket sort of represented, because these tickets are mass produced, which means they have to have some, you know, computer program deciding what numbers go where. But you can't just have a random number generator, because the lottery has to control how many tickets are winning tickets, which means that the sequences of numbers on these cards cannot be random. So this has to be manipulated by human hand, and thus there must be some algorithmic work at play. There must be some method to this.
So it was definitely the tic-tac-toe framework that provided the idea that there has to be a method. Like, if it had just been random, like scratch here, scratch there. But the fact that they're trying to overlay this scratch-off game into a tic-tac-toe framework, is that where there has to be some sort of...
I think that the mechanism of the game is, like, it makes you think it's random, but, like, nothing on a scratch-off ticket can be random because...
Because
the lottery needs to control the amount of winning tickets. But the thing that's interesting about the matching ones are that you get some information before you even scratch off a ticket, as opposed to like a pure scratch off that's like playing a slot machine or something.
Yeah.
The lottery is still controlling how many winners there are, but you don't get any information before you do the scratching. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, So that is what interests him, is like, not only is the scratching part not random, the numbers that you're matching up also can't be random, because that's how the win happens, is you match. So he starts thinking about this, and it reminds him of the math he does in his job. So his job is that he's a consultant for mining companies, and he looks at data from samples from gold deposits. So like, from people like taking soil samples, and you see like it has this much gold in the sample.
Yeah.
And from a bunch of these samples all around, you can try
to
determine.
Not the first time a Canadian gold mining operation has entered our sphere. Yeah.
We did.
I forget the name of
Briex.
It. Briex. Briex. Yeah.
I was thinking about Briex when I was looking this up. I was like, I wonder if he knows. I wonder if he knows.
Yeah. the Joker new rock stars meme. Does he know?
Yeah. But yeah, like, so like the way that this works is basically he looks at these samples and you can find patterns in them, and those patterns will help you determine where the load is that this gold is coming from, you know? So he says, like with the scratch off, the numbers might seem random, as if the gold has just been scattered, but they're actually not random at all. There are fundamental geologic forces that created those numbers. If I know the forces, I can decipher the samples. I can figure out how much gold is underground.
Fuck, so, I love a guy like this.
Yeah. And I love that it's gold, too, because it's like...
Yeah.
The metaphor works perfectly, you know?
Yeah. I've been hunting for gold my entire life.
Exactly.
This dashing nerd.
So... he's like, if this scratch-off is actually similar to the way I do math, it means that you are not just subject to chance with these scratch-offs, that there is a way to determine what is going to be a winning ticket. If he can figure out what the forces are that are applied, he might be able to plunder the lottery, as this article calls it. He might be able to, like, game it and figure it out.
Hell yeah.
So he's like, he's just like thinking about this for a couple days. He's like, it can't be this easy. I can't be the first person to have figured this out. But then again, you think about it, like I said at the beginning, most of the people playing the lottery are not statisticians, you know? And most of the people creating the scratch-offs are not statisticians.
Sure. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. A statistician who plays the lottery players. Is not a good statistician. That's like your first sign that's...
Yeah. A guy who understands the numbers would be like, that is not a good game to play. Yeah.
So he's just like, I can't be the first person to figure this out. That's crazy. So he's just thinking about this. He's thinking about this sort of model, because there's a bunch of different scratch-offs that are sort of like this, that have the same thing. So the reason for these scratch-offs that are sort of matching, as opposed to just scratch-off and you find out when you win or lose, is they're more exciting to play. you know?
Yeah.
They have a little bit of suspense involved because you're like matching them up and you're like, okay, I have two in a row, but you need three in a row. So then you have like a few seconds of like excitement.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
am I going to
get
three in a row?
Yeah.
So these games are called baited hook games. They're also called extended play games. And they're designed because they are sort of more addicting than a regular scratch off because it requires a little bit of work on your part. It requires sort of like hunting. And they deliberately load the cards with two in a row matchups. So you feel like you're almost winning.
Yeah,
you know?
You're almost there. Dude, I've always thought it was hilarious that the advertising behind at least Texas Scratch Offs, which I've seen commercials for those my entire life, is that they can't be like they really can't like sell the gambling aspect. They have to like sell it's a game. What are games? Oh, they're
right.
Fun. And so they sell that the fun part of the scratch off ticket is the scratching part.
Yep.
That's a huge part of gambling advertising. They're like, I scratch, scratch, scratch. Ooh, I'm scratching. Hey, I'm scratching. Hey, come scratch today. That's the fun part is the scratching. It's like, that's not why we're here, dude. You know that. I know that.
It's also like, I get why they're doing it, but it does feel like the way, like, I feel like anything that's addictive, people love the ritual of it, you know? Like,
yeah.
Anything that you have sort of like a, you know, addictive relationship to, it's like you like the thing, but you like all the things around the thing because it means you're going to get the thing, you know? Like,
oh, yeah, dude, that is, man, that's 100% true. I know that from some other things that we will not divulge. But, like, also, like, I know that they say, like, people who are addicted to, let's say, for example, drugs, when they like they look at a lot of overdoses, and a lot of overdoses occur when there's a an environmental change.
Mm.
And so a lot of times, like, they just did a study and found that most people, like, not most people, but I don't know the things, but like people who tended, like, let's say you always shoot up in your apartment.
Yeah.
But then one day you shoot up at your friend's apartment, you're more likely to overdose there because your body's the environmental factors, whatever your body has trained yourself to be like, hey, this is coming.
Right.
It's a little off, it's a little different. And whatever, you know, whatever buildup or metabolism that you had for it isn't there.
Interesting.
And so yeah, it is very ritual based, and it is a little disconcerting to know that there's very well paid teams of people out there that are figuring out what that is for us, whether it be vaping or playing a mobile game or playing a scratch off ticket or fucking, you know, eating Lunchables that are jam packed full of sodium, whatever the fuck,
right? Whatever they're putting in fucking McDonald's fries or whatever.
Well, like, there's never enough, you know. It's like they know what they're doing, and it's just interesting slash scary to think about.
It's spooky for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody get some Narcan if you can. It's free in most places. Google where to get Narcan. It's a good idea. But anyway, Srivastava found this trick, and I'm going to explain it to you. It's a little hard to comprehend, but I feel like if you think about it for a little bit, it sort of makes sense. So I'm just going to read directly from Jonah Lehrer here because I feel like he explains it clearer than I could.
I've heard that guy's full of shit. I don't know.
That's true. He is a known liar. So each ticket contained 8 tic-tac-toe boards, and each space on those boards, 72 in all, contained a number from 1 to 39. So there's 72 spaces but 39 numbers. So as a result, some of these numbers were repeated multiple times. So like, you know, maybe there's 3 17s or maybe there's 2 38s or whatever. But a few numbers show up only once on the entire card. And what Srivastava realized was that he could separate the winning tickets from the losing tickets by looking at the number of times each of the digits occurred on the tic-tac-toe boards. So he didn't look at all the digits. Instead, he looked at how many times each number appeared. And what he's looking for is singletons, numbers that only appear once. And if he sees singletons, like the single numbers are almost always repeated in the scratch off.
Yeah.
So if he can find 3 of those in a row, which is how you get a tic-tac-toe, you can scratch it off and it's probably going to be a winner. So that's pretty simple. Like, you just look and
is.
You see, okay, this number doesn't repeat. And then you look at the one next to it and you're like, this number doesn't repeat. And then you look at the one next to that and you know that number doesn't repeat. You got a winning ticket. So,
yeah. Okay. All right, so I will say one thing. He is already well beyond my friend who worked at the gas station. He has surpassed my gas station homie.
I don't want to be rude to your friend, but I am not super surprised by that.
By all means, this guy was probably talking shit. But so that being said, how does he do that without buying the ticket, or like I guess that's where, like, where is he able to apply that edge?
Yeah, so I guess he's just stopping at the gas station and looking, and they're letting him look and pick, because to everyone else, there's no way you can tell. Like,
everybody else
is like, yeah, it's a game of chance. If you have some superstition and you want to pick the one that you think is lucky, sure, whatever.
Yeah.
So they're just letting him pick. Like, the gas station doesn't care because they don't think that there's any way to tell. So.
Okay. I guess Canadian Lottery is a little more trustworthy. You know? Like, hey, man, we're just winning at Acorns or whatever the fuck it is they buy coffee with up there.
We'll get into how this could be applied on a larger scale near the end of the article. But he's just doing it as a person, and they're like, yeah, whatever. Here are like a couple you can pick from what you want. So he gets a bunch on this hunch, and he realizes that this trick is working 90% of the time, which is incredible. That is wild odds.
He's cracked it.
He's cracked it. So. Yeah. He starts getting really excited, and then he's like, wait a minute, I'm a statistician for a gold mining company. This is not worth my time. Like,
yeah.
He's just like, I already make like a lot of money, and I don't need to go to 90 gas stations a day. So
So I'm getting some real honey come back to bed vibes. Yeah. Off this. It's just like, hang out with your friends, dog.
So, like, that's the thing. And that's what I think is pretty interesting about this is we're going to get into it. But, like, he doesn't do anything with this. He tells the gaming commission. Like, but the thing is, like, he says in this article, he's like, people always, like, give me kudos for being honest. It was like, I literally just was making more money. Like, I'm not like a great person. I just did, like with everything in my life, I just did the math. And I realized where the value was, you know?
Man, that is such a cool thing to me is being able to figure stuff out like that. And I've had a few, like, just like routines at jobs I've had in the past where I've figured out, like, you know, like, oh, a thing where I can do this thing easier or figure out the numbers on something. And like when you crack that code, it's very, you get the little dopamine hit. You're like, oh, hell yeah, I see that. But I do love that, like, you know, obviously everything is governed by math. I love that there's people out there that are so knowledgeable about that. They can see the loopholes in it. And that's why we do this podcast. Whenever I hear stories like that where somebody's like, actually, it has to be this, that's always endlessly satisfying to me to hear that shit figured out.
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me a little bit of the episode we just recorded that's coming out in 2 weeks, where it's like the key to being a good gambler is just like seeing the long game and knowing the sort of long averages. And like this guy did that. It's like it sounds really exciting to be like, I cracked the lottery. But when you think about what that actually means for your life and everything, he's like, I think my job is really interesting and I get paid more money to do it. Scratching lottery tickets is not that stimulating to me. So like I'm not going to do it.
I think that's indicative of it's like the IQ necessary to crack this shit would also imbue you with the idea that like I shouldn't even try this.
Right. Or like you probably have to be smart enough to like be making a good living. Because it's not like he cracked the mega bucks or something. You know, it's scratch offs. You can't really win that much.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he goes to the Ontario Lottery and Gaming Commission, and he tries to get in touch with them. And nobody is like getting back to him. And he thinks it's because to them, he probably sounds like your gas station friend where it's just like,
yeah,
a lot of people think they've cracked it. Like, like,
also, I wonder what they call scratch offs in Canada because they always have some weird name for everything. Like, you know, ninth grade is grade nine. They're like, oh, you heard about that one guy that cracked the Scratchy Boys or whatever the fuck they call them.
My friend JP McDade.
Cat's Claws or something.
My friend JP McDade has a great tweet about, like, he's like, you think you can live in Canada and then you find out they call Kermit the Frog Green Dennis or something. And you're like, no way.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm gonna get a bag of milk and a few scratching rockets or some shit. Like, what are you doing? Yeah, what a wild ass little attic we have up there. In
what
America.
A world! Yeah, America's attic up there, being weird. So he's trying to get in touch with them, and nobody is giving a shit. And so he's like, fine. He buys some more cards. He sorts them. Like into winners and losers, but he doesn't scratch them. He's like, I know this pile is winners. I know this pile is losers. And he sends that to the gaming commission. And like 2 hours after that delivery, they call him. And they're like, oh, no.
Oh, dude, I, like, we've experienced this before where somebody has tried to – I can't remember a specific incident where somebody's like, hey, I figured something out. Look at this. And nobody took notice. And they're like, well, all right, fuck it. That's happened before.
Yeah, it's like I did my best. Now I get to take advantage of this. But this guy was persistent. So he sent it to them. The head of security gets in touch. He explains it. And they end up pulling the tic-tac-toe game. They're like, clearly there's a problem here.
Yeah.
But weirdly, they don't pull any of the other games that operate on the same principle, which can presumably also be cracked in similar ways. Like, maybe not exactly the same way, but...
Yeah.
The fact that they are not random and that you are getting data before you scratch the ticket means that there must be mathematical ways to figure all this stuff out. So
yeah,
there are
it's ultimately just complex algebra. It's like that. What was that? That guess behind what? Like, there was a game show back in the day where you could.
Yeah, choose, the like door one, two, or three.
The one, two, three doors, and that mathematician lady who wrote an article or who wrote a column was like, actually, if you disregard the first door, you have a higher percentage of winning the next one. And all these guys are like, no, you don't. And she's like, no, you do. And she figured it out. But it was like,
that is one of the most crazy. I remember trying to understand that, and it like blows.
It doesn't even make sense to me.
Wild.
Yeah, it's like that's how smart that woman was.
It's
crazy. And she just wrote a column for an article about a casual interest in mathematics, and she was smarter than like the brightest people in the field at the time. That was such a cool story.
So like, there's a lot of security stuff with scratch-offs where their main concern is they're like, we don't want people to develop technology to see under the scratchy part, so the scratchy part is latex. So they're like, we don't want people to be able to see through the latex and see the winning stuff that way. Like, that's what they're worried about. But they don't seem to be worried at all about the fact that they're giving information in these baited hook games before you scratch. And so, like, they discontinue the tic-tac-toe game, but they keep all of these other games that operate off a similar principle. And he's like, I don't believe that this is the only game like this. Like, what are the odds?
Yeah.
Again, he's a statistician, so he probably says, what are the odds
in his
life?
It's like, what are the odds that this is the only game? Turns out, like, pretty low,
So he starts looking at other games that have this... mechanism. He mostly starts looking at other tic-tac-toe games because, like, obviously this only happened in Toronto. There are only like a couple companies that make scratch-offs for like the entire North American lottery system. So a lot of them use like basically the same types of games. They just sell them to different governments and stuff to run these lotteries. So there's one called Scientific Games. There's one called G-Tech Printing. They develop the games, they design the cards, and they also provide, like, consultants for the lottery. So, like, the lottery basically trusts them to do all of the due diligence about, like, how these games actually work. But they're all, like, you know, it's like the classic lobbying thing. It's like, well, they have a vested interest in telling the states that these will work because they want the states to buy them, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, he starts looking at other tic-tac-toe games. He has a really good friend that lives in Colorado. So he is like, send me some scratch-offs from Colorado. Like, find the tic-tac-toe ones because I know they're out there. Send me the Colorado ones. He realizes that this trick also works for the Colorado ones, although only at 70% accuracy, not 90. But that's still really good.
Yeah, that's the way better shot that you have than normally playing a scratch off.
Right, which is like what, like 2% or something? Like, it's
crazy. I would imagine.
So, he also tries another Ontario game, Super Bingo, which operates in the same way. He finds that he can crack it at a 70% rate. He tells the Ontario Lottery about that one, and they pull it, but they're like, well, but it wasn't the same problem. It was a different problem. The same guy cracked in the same way, but it was different.
Yeah. The guy who knows numbers is like, no, fundamentally, it's the same problem. You're like, nah, it's different because that one's tic-tac-toe and this one's dominoes.
Right.
You're fucking nincompoop. You know?
So, yeah, like, as I said, the things that they're more worried about than people doing math is they're worried about how can people see through the latex. Some of the ways that people have cracked them in the past are you can like soak the scratch off part with vodka and then see the ink underneath, and then it'll dry and you don't, you know, you can't tell that someone had put vodka on it. You can also be like,
is there anything vodka can't do?
Solves everything. It's good for a wound disinfection. It's great.
Yeah.
Also, sometimes in the barcodes of the tickets, there will be data about the payouts in that. So, like, they're worried about somebody on the inside. Okay. So they're always, like, worried about that kind of encryption, but they're not, they don't think about the fact that, like, the games themselves might have a flaw. So, this is what I wanted to talk about as far as, like, that this guy isn't the only person who's cracked this. Like, maybe your friend at the gas station didn't, but it statistically, it
I'm starting to doubt less and less on this. I'm starting to think I'm putting less and less faith in my boy G as, as time marches on in this episode.
It's interesting, though, because, like, again, if you look at the statistics of claimed winnings on scratch-offs, they do seem to indicate that some people have figured out how to do this. So,
yeah.
In Washington and Virginia, which were two states that were subjected to a study about this stuff, certain scratch games, mostly baited hook games like we've been talking about, showed payoff anomalies that were extremely rare. The anomalies are always the same. Break-even tickets, where the payout is equal to the cost, are significantly under-redeemed, while certain types of winning tickets are vastly over-redeemed. So there's like a game in Virginia, a blackjack scratch ticket, where like $2 break-in even winners, it's like way less than you would think, but there were a ton of $4, $6, $10, and $20 winners. And most baited hook games in Virginia and Washington displayed the same irregularity. So the lottery says that this is just because people forget to redeem break-even tickets. But it seems weird that would only happen.
You're underestimating the value of $2 to people.
Totally. Absolutely. And also, it's like,
also,
why?
If you scratch it right there, all you gotta do is turn it back in.
Just
you're
go right
there.
Back in. Yeah, go right back into the gas station.
I never take a scratch home ticket, a scratch off ticket to my house.
No way.
That shit's getting scratched on the counter.
That, see, this is, I got in a big debate on my other podcast about this. That's how I feel about getting food at a drive in. That's not going to my house. I'm eating that
in
the car.
No. That's, you guys get in the car. I come from a long line of family of car eaters. Yeah, that was a big thing in my family. I love getting food from a drive-thru, pulling around to the fucking parking spot at the edge of the parking lot.
Have a nice
throwing
time.
Throwing on a podcast, eating my Whataburger. You know what I'm saying? As a depressed man.
know? That's some me time, you know? Literally, I don't own a car anymore because I live in New York, but I have a friend who, when she goes out of town, she lets me use her car. And I will, even though I live in a city with like tons of good food within walking distance, when I get that car, I will go through a drive-through.
Yeah.
Because it's like it's a unique experience. It's like it's a form of solo eating that I appreciate.
Yeah, it's a thing, dude. That's why like I'll get off work sometimes and pull up to, like, and just park in front of my house and just like dick around on my phone for 15 minutes before I go in. You know? I had an ex one time. I pulled up to her house and was doing the thing, being on my phone, and she just came out to take the trash out. And she's like, "Have you just been sitting in the driveway not coming in the house?" And I was like,
"I'm busy."
That's kind of exactly what I've been doing. But yeah, I'm busy. Like, God damn it. Your boy needs some me time.
Exactly.
Know?
But anyway, it seems weird that only the tickets of these types of games, these baited hook games, would show this anomaly. Yeah. It makes it seem like there are definitely some people out there who figured this out and just have not.
Yeah, with just him.
Yeah, who have just not shared it, you know, have not snitched on themselves because they're like, I have an unlimited $20 money glitch that I figured out.
That's going to be a real A-team of fucking sweatpants wearers out there.
Hey, man, they must have been so mad when this article came out and somebody blew up their spot.
It's like dudes getting the team together. He's like, yeah, I'll get the squad together. It's just like eight dudes and women in like Cookie Monster sweatpants. Just with big gulps and shit.
But yeah, so like Srivastava, he gets asked about this. He's like, well, if you were doing this to make a living, the first thing you would do is avoid a losing or a break-even ticket because there's no profit in that. So like, of course, you wouldn't pick those, you know? So if people were able to sort the winners and the losers, this is the kind of statistical anomaly you would see, which makes it seem like that's what people are doing.
Yep.
So there's some other suspicious data. There was a big audit that happened in Massachusetts in the early 2000s of redeemed lottery tickets and stuff. And it found that one person who it did not share any identifying information about them, but one specific person cashed in over 1,500 winning tickets between 2002 and 2004 and won a grand total of $2.84 million.
Yeah, boy. Where was that at again?
Massachusetts.
Massachusetts. So, oh, hell yeah. Massholes. Yeah. Just coming in for clutch. That guy figured it out. He knew what was going on.
Yeah. There was one in 1999 that found that someone had cashed in 150 tickets worth $237,000. While the top 10 multiple prize winners had won 842 times between them for a total of $1.8 million. This all with the knowledge that only 6 out of every 100,000 will yield a prize. So, I'm sorry, so only 6 out of every 100,000 will yield a prize between 1,000 and 5,000. So,
But you got to get the numbers they're getting, you got to be finding those tickets.
You got to know something. So,
yeah.
What there's one other possible explanation for this, which might account for some of it, but I feel like it can't account for all of it. That there is this phenomenon of people who are known as professional cashiers who they turn in other people's winning lottery tickets so that the people who won it can avoid taxes. So
you can pay somebody
to do it. And I don't know. I guess that person just doesn't pay their taxes. I'm not sure how they're dealing with this. But yeah, that is like a thing.
I bet that guy's a road comic. Because I remember people would ask me, like, hey, how do you pay taxes on all that road money? And I'd be like, what's up? How do I do one on what? What are you asking about? I don't know. I'm not the guy to ask.
So, and then here's one other example. This woman, Joan Ginther, who's a Texan from Bishop, Texas.
I have no clue where that's at.
I don't either. But she's won.
But still,
she's won more than $1 million from the Texas lottery on 4 different occasions. So
hell yeah.
Is she
single? She got a sister? Come on now.
So 3 of her wins came from baited hook scratch tickets, the type we've been talking about.
There you go.
She won $10 million from a $50 ticket in 2010, which is the largest scratch prize ever awarded by the Texas Lottery. So, yeah, it's like, okay, well, maybe this person is insanely lucky, or maybe she's figured this shit out, and nobody before Mohan Srivastava has ever, like, blown the whistle on it, you know?
Real Debbie Downer.
The other thing to remember about this is, like, again, the lottery fixes the proportion of winning tickets so that they're always going to make money. It doesn't matter who they pay out to. Because it's the same amount of money.
Yeah.
Some of them never get bought or whatever, but like they calculate this into their budget that like if all of the winning tickets are purchased, here's the amount of money we're going to have to pay out.
There's no like, oh, we really lost our ass on scratch offs this quarter. Like that doesn't happen.
It's not like a casino or something in that way. Like,
I would imagine this hasn't stopped them from playing victim. This whole thing and being like
they seem to really downplay the problem.
Because they're just like, no, because
they don't, it doesn't matter to them because they're still making a profit, you know. It doesn't matter what like the proportion of
it does is
shift the proportion of who is receiving the winnings to one person, you know.
It's like if you have a bill that you have to pay, like it's a bill you have to pay. The bill they had to pay was whatever they allotted out for the winnings on this particular game. Mm-hmm. That was already earmarked for that, you know.
Granted, this article is old, like it is like 10 years old, but from what I found online, these games are all still like forms of these games are all still in scratch offs. Like I've seen them. I'm sure you have too. These are definitely still happening. So, Srivastava talks about like how, cause like, it's one thing if it's like, you know, one or two people, whatever, it's bad, but it's not like, a a problem writ large, right? But then he starts talking about, like, how could organized crime use this? Because this could be a very valuable tool.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And there is an example of... so this is just, like, sort of a funny anecdote. In 1991, Whitey Bulger, the famous, you know, Jack Nicholson and The Departed type guy. South Boston Irish mob. He and three
also
other...
Also Johnny Depp in Whitey Bulger and the Boys. I forget the movie's called.
Yeah. That one.
Yeah.
Which I guess Whitey Bulger was like photographed going to sea or something. Do you remember that?
Oh, no. I didn't hear about that.
They ended up getting him and then he died. But for a long time, he was like in the wind and it was... maybe it was The Departed.
Yeah, I remember that.
But anyway...
I would go I would go see The Departed if I was him. You know, that's
choice.
What I would go see. Yeah.
So in 1991, he and three other people actually cashed in a winning lottery ticket worth $14.3 million. And he was under investigation then, but he was a free man. So they were like, we got to give you the money. Like, okay.
He's like, can I pose with a check? They didn't want to pose with the check. He's like, no, you got to let me pose with the check. This is fucking mugging.
So what they think happened was that this is a really great opportunity for a criminal to launder money, right? Because it's a huge chunk of change that you can suddenly explain having and pay taxes on, and then it becomes legitimate income. So what they think he probably did was that he bought a share in a winning lottery ticket that somebody had hipped him to, you know?
Yeah.
And then probably let the person keep the money, and then he ended up, you know, minus the tax penalty or whatever, and then he kept the clean cash. So the lottery in general is like a really easy way to launder money if you can figure out how to get winning tickets, right?
Yeah.
And if you can figure out how to get enough winning tickets, it can actually be a profitable form of money laundering, which who doesn't want that, you know?
Yeah.
That's a dream.
Making money on money here, you know, at this point.
So if you wanted to do this kind of thing as a organized crime scam, you would need to do it with so many scratch offs that it wouldn't make sense to like manually pick out the numbers to like that takes too long. You would need to buy so many tickets that you would need like a scanner or something to sort the winners from the losers. So like you can't do that at a gas station, right? Like you can't like bring your laptop and
couldn't you bribe a gas station employee to let you fucking toilet paper that roll out and go
There's a couple ways you could do this. First of all, a bulk scratch-off purchase does not necessarily raise suspicion because a lot of people will buy them for like prizes for a raffle or like a church spaghetti dinner or whatever. Like it's not that weird to buy a ton of scratch-offs. And Srivastavan checked this, and he like checked with a bunch of these people at these gas stations. Must be so sick of this guy coming in and asking questions. But they told him like, you can return unscratch-offed tickets. If you haven't scratched it off, you can return it. So he was like, it would make sense if you weren't going to bribe somebody, you could buy a bunch, scan them, and then return the losers. Like that is also an option. So
I don't think you should be able to return scratch off tickets.
It's on the principle of how could anyone know, but it's super suspicious.
And also it's Canada. He's like, well, all right then. All right, like, I guess I'll take these back. I'm sure you didn't do anything with these.
So I guess I'll leave us on this, which is this last quote from Srivastava about this. He says, quote, "There is nothing random about the lottery. In reality, everything about the game has been carefully designed to control payouts and entice the consumer. Of course, these elaborate design elements mean that the ticket can be undesigned and that the algorithm can be reverse engineered." So I think that's super interesting. I feel like this does, if you already have a gambling problem, this would spur you on to be like, I can figure it out. Which
some guy's fucking finishing his drink right now, running out to his minivan. His wife's like, where are you going? He's like, I figured it out, baby. No more mac and cheese for us. It's sirloin steaks from here on out.
I feel like if you're not a statistician, you should probably err on the side of you haven't figured it out.
And I know most of our listeners are statisticians, but for the few out there who are not.
I would exercise
caution.
I will, like, next time I buy a scratch off, I am gonna use this. Like,
yeah,
you know, like,
why would we not? Yeah, anybody out there? Let's get it.
Who knows? I mean, they all kind of have a slightly different mechanism, but like, yeah. Now that I know it, like, it can't hurt. So worst I lose is two bucks. So you know.
Yeah, I got a bit of an edge, man. We had a hardcore gambling session tonight, man. We talked about. Yeah. Well, shit. Thank you very much, Kath, for sharing that story and potentially making us a little rich. Check it out. If you, this is a good faith. I need this on everybody on good faith. If you do this system and you win, throw us 1%. 1%.
Sign up for the Patreon.
You know, that's all we're asked for. Yeah.
If you win any money from this, if it's more than $20, you should get the Patreon for 1 month. You can download all the episodes. They're downloadable. I don't care. You can sign up for a month and download our whole back catalog of bonus episodes if you want.
Come on with it. I am just now learning that. Didn't know that, but come on with it. Let's go. And I'm not even mad about it. I'm just like, oh, shit, I can be doing that.
Yeah, no, that's a great way to scam us if you want to scam us.
What if we found out that I was selling bootleg Lie, Cheat, Steal Patreon episodes?
I mean, I've got to respect that, given what our podcast is about. If you were trying to cut me out on some bootleg episodes.
This is a secret Patreon where I'm selling them for a buck a piece.
I can't hate.
Oh, guys. Yeah. That would be that will be whenever we decide to fucking put the brakes on this thing, like that will be how we end it, is that there'll be a scandal where I've been scamming the fucking episodes. Well, damn, yo, that's crazy. Kat, thank you so much for putting that together for us. Thanks for giving us the knowledge about that. And yeah, guys, if you're out there, get out there, use it to your advantage, but be cool about it. But if you do win, you gotta sign up for the Patreon.
Please
if you don't, we will be mad. And you don't want that. Yeah. We're unhappy. It's bad for us. That being said, so this is going to come out
a week from today.
This is going to come out
a week from today.
Week from today. So this is going to be next Friday. So my name is Pat Sorois. You can catch me on Instagram at PZTexas, PEEZYTX. And I also run a monthly show at South Austin Comedy Club. It's called Saturday Pint Live, and that's going to be on the 23rd of this month. So a little close to Christmas, but we got a real murderer's row of everybody who is not on vacation. So you should come and check that show out. Kathy, got anything for us?
I have my monthly show, Paid Protest, is going to be back on January 5th. Our last one was great. I think Judah Friedlander is going to do this one too. He did the last one.
Oh, hell yeah.
We always have a great lineup. We have a great time. Come to that. It's at Silo in Bushwick, January 5th, 7:30 p.m. Follow me on social media at Kath Barbadoro. I have another podcast called What a Time to Be Alive that comes out every week. I think that's all I have to plug. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah, guys, thanks for tuning in. I hope your December is going great. Check us out on Patreon if you liked what you heard today. Have fun with the lottery. Use your winnings for good. By good, I mean signing up for our Patreon. That being said, guys, be safe, be smart, but above all, don't get caught.
Don't get caught. See you next time.